The Spectator magazine is home to wonderful writing, insightful analysis, and unrivaled books and arts reviews. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online. Along with a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher, go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's politics podcast. I'm Oscar Edmondson. I'm joined today by Katie Balls and Paul Goodman. Now, we are approaching the end of the year, which is, of course, a time for reflection. So on this podcast, we thought we'd take stock of the Conservative Party and their position at the end of 2024 under new leader Kemi Badenoch. Katie, how do you think she's settled in so far?
So she's a little over a month in. I think there was an interesting poll recently which suggested that the public are not yet convinced she looks like a prime minister in waiting. And at a similar point for Keir Starmer's leadership, he was further ahead on this question. So you can argue it's too early to tell in lots of ways, and I think that is correct. There are a few metrics to suggest that she is not where you might want to be in some places, such as, do you look like a future prime minister? Which is always quite a key metric in general elections. That said, general intention polling at the moment, where Labour are often second, sometimes even third, and the Tories often first. You know, they're not huge margins. We're talking about a couple of points here or there. But there's definitely a better position for the Tories to be in than not be in. I think, you know, it was Rishi Sunak's last day in office where finally he got his 1-point lead over Labour. He could have done it a little bit sooner, maybe during the general election.
Yeah.
But they got there. And I think you can safely say Kemi Badenoch has not made that worse.
Yes.
Now, we can have the debate as to oppositions don't win elections, governments lose them, and that's behind the polling. But you can also have a very bad performance, which suddenly means that, you know, And if it was the case that it was Reform, Labour, Tories, we would all be saying she's completely rubbish already. And so, I mean, people are still being quite critical of her, I think it's worth pointing out. And I think she has had a few moments where, you know, columnists and so forth were coming out saying, oh, is she a bit Ed Miliband? Is she gaffe prone? Is she failing to seize the opportunity at Prime Minister's questions? Should she be out more? Where's the policy? And these are probably the most regular complaints you get. I think that there is always pressure for new leaders to announce a bunch of policy, and often they come to regret that. Speaking to those who worked for David Cameron, they said actually they think they did announce too much too soon. I think some in Keir Starmer's team think they announced too much too soon. So what might entertain a journalist isn't always what is actually the best plan for rebuilding. But she has the rather unique, it might not even be so unique, but the challenge she faces is that it's not just about Keir Starmer, which might allow you to have more time. It's also about Nigel Farage to the right of her.
And Paul, what do you think? Are we being a bit too harsh on Kemi a little too soon?
Or too nice? Are we being too nice?
One needs to look at Kemi Badenoch not in isolation, but as a Conservative leader coming in after a Labour landslide, rather like after 1945, or in a certain sense, 2005, where David Cameron faced a big Labour majority, or even 1974, where the Conservatives had lost 4 of the previous 5 elections. And there are always people who say, we need more policy now. Other people who say we should stand back. Other people who say you should attack the government more. The difference this time, as Katie was saying, is that the situation is objectively worse. There are only 121 Conservative MPs. They face the Lib Dems in the so-called blue wall, the new burgeoning menace of Reform, Labour with an enormous majority, and there she is. And I think that her priorities in the leadership election of trying to set out a general critique were sensible enough. I think, however, there are some questions. And it seems to me that Kemi Badenoch's motto in political life as she's moved onwards and upwards is that if you're not with her, you're very much against her. Mm. And I think this sort of shows in the way she approaches the media, she's done to, you know, interviews in the very distinguished Spectator within the last 6 months. But she seems very wary of going out much beyond her comfort zone. The team she's got around has got some experienced people in it, like Henry Newman and Josh Grimstone, but it's by and large consists of her sort of core supporters. And I feel that she's not yet, although this may happen, it may even happen soon, established a kind of connection with voters. What would you think of Kemi Badenoch if you were a voter with some engagement with politics, but not a lot? You'd think, so, the Conservatives have chosen a black woman leader. That's interesting and unusual. What do we know about Kemi Badenoch? Well, we know she's got a sort of reputation for being quite outspoken. And she's very interested in all this woke and identity stuff that I don't really understand. But what I don't get, me, you know, Mr. Alderman's average voter, is what's her plan for my living standards? Mm. What's she think about the state of the health service? What's she really think about immigration, where I feel she's not exactly had a history over time as someone who's been a strident opponent at very high levels. And as yet, she's not really sort of gone there or done any of that. And I feel that that's the next stage she'll want to move on to in the new year.
Mm. And Katie, I mean, Paul picks up there on one of the big criticisms about Kemi Badenoch, which is that she's a sort of one-trick pony, culture warrior. But you interviewed her for the Spectator's Christmas issue. Did you get to learn anything more about her and perhaps even her policies?
Not so much policies, because that is something where it's so well trodden from the leadership election that she did not want to get into policy in the way that Robert Jenrick, James Cleverly and others were. They're, you know, pushed on a few things, so would you look, for example, at some of the ideas Robert Jenrick and Neil O'Brien put in, you know, a think tank paper about different countries, immigrants having different offers depending on what we think bring to the country? She said, you know, nothing's off the table. She talked about Meloni in Italy as being radical and how she was interested in ideas that are radical, having a Malay being radical in government spending, and how she'd actually been interested to discover that she thought that'd be very unpopular, but it seems to be working in a way that she probably was not perhaps sceptical that it worked, but how it's landing. And of course, there are some saying, well, look at poverty in Argentina and so forth, but they are just out for a recession, which I think is clearly an achievement, which is clearly a big achievement. Then she was also talking about looking at how Elon Musk and Donald Trump will approach government efficiency. So I think you got a sense more of the ideas she was interested in, not the hard policy. And again, the idea that nothing's off the table. We know they're going to be starting a series of policy commissions early in the new year. And that's what David Cameron did to a degree. Margaret Thatcher also had a model for doing it. And they're looking at those as a basis of where to go from. Probably where I think I learned the most about Kemi Badenoch was more her personal tastes. And everyone became very obsessed with the sandwich line.
Yeah.
Lunches for Wimps, which was a Gordon Gekko quote separately. But I would encourage people to read the interview. Of course I would. It's in the Christmas issue and it has my byline on it, along with my new editors. But I think what I found quite refreshing, but I also do think it relates to some will criticise for this, right? You could actually ask her questions about her views on things, probably more her hinterland, cultural taste, and she would answer them in a way that Keir Starmer, you know, when it said, do you dream? And he said, I don't dream. I don't have one. She was much more forthcoming. So yes, she talked about sandwiches not being her thing and getting her lunch delivered and mentioned steak. I think she also gets sushi sometimes. There's a scoop. But she also talked about, you know, well, you talked about these philosophers, like, what about fictional characters? And there was quite an interesting answer from her there, but she talked about Becky Sharp and anti-heroes as something she's interested in. And then she said what she had less time for was, you know, this almost relativism that you see from Les Miserables and characters like Jean Valjean. And you, what started the conversation just about characters in fiction and said, you know, her problem with this is there is such a thing as a bad person. And some of these books, which, you know, the social democratic Europeans like, always kind of wish away a bad deed because you have a disability or you have something bad happen to you and you're younger. And you said, no, I don't have time for that because there is such a thing as a bad person. Not everyone can be saved. So I think there are probably flicks about her worldview and how she sees things, which I thought I hadn't come across in other interviews. Now, the criticism that Kemi Badenoch has had is, what are you trying to tell the public when it comes to Paul's point about a first impression? And what is your main takeaway or the message you want to keep landing? And I think the truth is they just don't have that at the moment. So it means that you end up having interesting conversations, but is there a message ruthless efficiency at the moment, which is this is what the Tories will do for you and Reform won't and Labour won't? Now, she does have stances on things like the farmers tax. It's something she's come out against. And I think we are getting some sense of policy when she's responding to things. But it just comes down to the perspective of both Kemi Badenoch and some of those who are very close to her and her leadership is they have time and this is a five-year project. Mm. And that underpins a sense that you don't need to rush into having, well, this is exactly what we need to land. plenty of people don't think they have time, including in the Tory party. I think she has about 6 months until the May local elections. Yeah. Not that she's going to be pushed out if it's a disappointing result. But at that point, I think the critics start to write the narrative for you, as opposed to you being able to set out your stall on your own terms. Opposition is a long time, of course, and you had Keir Starmer. You know, he had a low point where he later talked about how he almost resigned after the Hartlepool by-election. So you can have a rocky period and come back from it, but I think that there are plenty in the shadow cabinet who think that she has really until May to establish herself as she wants to, and then you potentially risk going back into Tory psychodrama, all these infighting, all people deciding that, you know, you're spent because you didn't manage to do X. And I think that's a tension when it comes to message discipline and so forth.
Mm. Well, Paul, where do you think they will sit, the Tories, sort of ideologically, as we go towards those May elections, especially taking into account the rise of Reform, Nigel Farage's star continuing to rise?
The first thing they'll do, obviously, and are doing quite energetically over the so-called farm tax, is just oppose the government and pick up some votes in their natural areas where their vote was very low because of disillusion about the accumulated inheritance of Conservative governments. So there'll be a certain amount of sort of simple attacking. I think in May, the message will be very much send a message to Labour and, you know, elect sensible, solid Conservative councillors who will run your area as well. Don't be distracted by Reform or the Lib Dems. I think we have to look beyond May for more. But I think it's important before then that she gets these policy commissions going, even if only in embryonic form. So there's some sort of sense of direction. I think the lesson of Starmer is that you do have time, but you've got to establish a connection over something. Mm. Starmer managed it in the simple sense of, you've had enough of the Tories, vote for change. Thatcher took a very long time to establish herself, but she did get there in the sense that she was able to latch onto and zoom in on a feeling that the unions were too strong, that inflation was out of control, and that she'd got a sort of plan for correcting what had gone wrong. David Cameron in 2005 was able to exploit a sense that you had quite a lot of Labour and big government, and it wasn't really delivering. She needs to do something like that, something like what Thatcher did and Cameron did, and speak directly to the concerns of the country, of which the three big ones are always living standards, the NHS and migration, and show that she cares about these things just as much as she does about fighting woke or identity politics, and that she's got answers to them that Keir Starmer doesn't have.
And Katie, on Donald Trump, do you think we're going to see a situation in 2025 where we have Kemi Badenoch and Nigel Farage sort of actively competing for the ear of the president?
Well, I think the question is, can Kemi Badenoch even get in the race to win Donald Trump's ear, in the sense, can she get in the room? Mm. And as leader of the opposition, it's just, you have something where you don't want to put yourselves too forward that you set yourself up for failure, and then everyone writes, how lame. Kemi Badenoch went to Washington and Donald Trump would not meet with her. Mm. Because, of course, while they're not doing policy, I do think it's interesting some of the things they have decided to do early on. And I think Kemi Badenoch going with her chief of staff, Lee Rowley, to Washington, meeting J.D. Vance. Yes, it didn't get quite the level of attention that Suella Braverman's husband defecting to Reform, or just joining Reform. Maybe it wasn't really even a defection, but joining Reform got around that time. But I think it was still quite an important marker to put down, because Kemi Badenoch cannot compete with Nigel Farage in relationships with Donald Trump, but she does need to make sure Republicans know that, at least right now, Reform is not the main opposition to Labour, and there is a Tory party that exists, and the leader is not currently, though who knows in the future, Nigel Farage. Mm. And therefore, having that trip, and yes, you can have, you know, Reform say, well, even David Lammy, though he is foreign secretary, you know, but he could, as shadow foreign secretary, he could get meetings with J.D. Vance. There is such a thing. But I still think that meeting Pierre Poilievre in Canada, steps like this are just, I think, just getting herself in the room and getting herself in the arena of right-wing leaders, many of whom are either in power or on the cusp of power. It does feel as though there is a, you know, there's a new right forming in the world when you think about Javier Milei, Donald Trump, George Maloney, you would expect Canada to be next. And I think if she can pitch herself as a part of that, or almost a part of a wave or a trend that is going in the right direction, that makes her look better. And the risk is if she doesn't, then Nigel Farage looks like he's the person on the right who fits into that. So I think that was a decent move by her to do, even if she didn't quite get the Mar-a-Lago, you know, set up. Yeah. You could just got to take your chances where you can. And then I suppose more longer term, I just think on Trump, it's just difficult for both Tories and Labour on this, in the sense that it's going to give Nigel Farage just this sense of relevance. And obviously everyone's already talking him up, so I don't mean he's relevant now, but just that connection means people would just be paying more and more attention to what he says.
Mm. And Paul, any final unsolicited advice for Kemi Badenoch?
On Trump, it's very much a question of hare and tortoise. And Farage, if you like, is the attention-grabbing hare. If he gets up in Prime Minister's questions and says, we all know Donald Trump thinks this Chagos deal is rubbish, people will think that he is speaking for Trump and that the government minister isn't. Yeah. If the government minister denies it, it's a marvellous position to be in. And Farage can disrupt. He can have these meetings with Elon Musk. He can grab the headlines. He can make the weather. What Badenoch has to do very simply is get these, as Katie says, get these people to treat her as a winner. Yeah. If they treat her as a winner, it's just possible the voters will think, well, hang on a sec, you know, there she is with Maloney. There she is with Poilievre. There she is with Trump, if she can get the meeting with Trump. They're taking her seriously. Maybe we should too. So she will be very keen to get in the room with Trump. And I imagine in the chaos of the court of King Trump and Prince Vance, there's this discussion going on about what is really happening in British politics. Should we be putting all our Republican eggs in the reform basket because they're going to sweep everyone else aside and they're part of us? They are Britain Trump, as Trump himself said of Boris Johnson when Boris was Prime Minister. Or actually, are they a passing thing? And really, will the Conservatives be back? Because, hey, they always are. That's the kind of central question here. As for Kemi Badenoch, I think she's got to sort of get going without rushing, sort of festina lente, over these policy commissions. So there's something going on these big subjects, health, migration, living standards, and other things before the May elections.
Final question, Paul. Do you think Kemi Badenoch will still be Tory leader this time next year when we get you back for the podcast?
I think the odds are yes. And I may be here placing too much faith in what's famously known as the most sophisticated electorate in the world, who are prone to leadership elections at the drop of a hat. My understanding is the 22 have changed the rules. They've made a leadership challenge harder. You would think even the Parliamentary Conservative Party would realise that they can't keep doing this with Ed Davey in the wings and Nigel Farage in the wings and Labour with this enormous majority. In fact, I think there is a chance that Kemi Badenoch may just be the first Conservative opposition leader since Ted Heath not to win an election, but to stay on and win the next one. I don't think that's absolutely out of the question if she can come back from 121 with 200 seats, yeah. 220, 230. I think in those circumstances, especially if there wasn't a big reform breakthrough, the Conservatives might say, oh, actually, you know, do we really want the chaos of another leadership election? You know, she's done...
And there's
she's
a path to rebuilding. There's a path to rebuilding. Yeah.
You know, she's cleared the first hurdle. Why should we take a chance on someone else? So in that particular sense, starting where she is with 121 MPs, very little money, and very difficult circumstances, actually, in that sense, is a plus.
Oh, to be honest, that's way more optimist than I thought. Not only do you think she will be here next year, but potentially for 8 to 10 years to come. There we go.
Well, on that incredibly optimistic note, thank you very much, Paul. Thank you, Katie. And thank you for listening.